It's Tuesday, the 24th of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Jarrell Martin. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and JFerg 8132. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the show like JFerg 8132, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. It's simple, it's straightforward, and you can be the proud sponsor of one episode of the Red Rock Basketball Monster Show. So hey, why not? It helps all of us out. As I said, my name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with all of the shows that I broadcast, and you want to interact with me while I'm doing the broadcast, you can tweet at me at redrock_bball. That is the Twitter account. While you're tweeting, I mean, you might as well follow me there as well. And you can interact at any time, obviously. But during the show, we can have a back and forth if there's anything that tickles your fancy. As we begin talking about the Denver Nuggets, and this is what we're doing in this show. We're doing a Denver Nuggets season in review. So,
let's get to it.
Michael Bolton, I sure will. The Nuggets were a team that since they fired George Karl, obviously they've taken quite a few steps back. The Brian Shaw experiment was horrible. The firing of George Karl was not great, although in hindsight, given the way that Karl performed in Sacramento, maybe it was prophetic to get rid of him, that the addition of Shaw wasn't a great move. But getting Mike Malone in is definitely a step in the right direction. The young talent that this team has got is all of a sudden making them one of the more exciting younger teams in the NBA, throwing the fact that they have three first-round draft choices, three top 20 draft choices coming in this draft, with a plethora of younger, underrated stars, I think it's fair to say. And they could be pushing themselves back into becoming a playoff team in the next couple of seasons. Really, you know, there was a real downtime after Karl left, the Ty Lawson, whatever that was, that happened throughout the end of his career in Denver and the subsequent falling apart of his life after he was kicked out of the team, is a real down period for the Nuggets. But I think that you couldn't help but be pleased, excited, inspired by some of the younger players that the Nuggets had and some of the performances that a lot of these guys put forward. And their team is extraordinarily young. There's still a lot they need to do, obviously, but they've got the assets to do it. And I think they're probably not a playoff team next season. They could be. They could easily sneak into the eighth seed finishing this season with a record of 33-49. They could. I probably wouldn't be putting them there at this point. But they've got the pieces to be, in 3 or 4 years' time, a very solid team, and a team that could become, you know, quite strong if these players develop as they should. And then if they develop at a greater rate or to a level that we don't anticipate, then there's a lot more excitement up ahead for the Nuggets. I mentioned earlier that they do have multiple draft picks coming. All of those acquired due to trades, and I think it's worth noting how good a job that Tim Connelly has done, not only in the draft, but acquiring these picks. They're picking pick 7, which was the Knicks pick, which they acquired back in the Carmelo Anthony trade. It was a pick swap, so they get pick 7. They've got pick 15, which comes from the Houston Rockets in exchange for, that was the Ty Lawson deal. And they've got pick 19, which comes from the Portland Trailblazers, which came in exchange for Aaron Aflalo last season. And overall, you know, pick 19 for Aaron Aflalo, pick 15 for Ty Lawson, for two guys who were literally putrid this season, it's a huge win to get three of those picks. And look, they've got 5 picks overall, 7, 15, 19, 53, and 56. They might not keep all of them, but what it does do, especially those three early top 20 picks, it gives you flexibility to package them. It gives you flexibility to put them in a trade. It gives you flexibility to pick guys who play in Europe who might not come across, and the Nuggets have had tremendous success in doing that, in picking European players, keeping them over there for a year, bringing them across, and working out really well. And they've got some great European scouting department. The GM, Tim Connelly, again, does a great job with that. And that extra flexibility they have, where they can pick someone at 15 who they can afford to leave for a year because they might not have the roster spot. Same at pick 19, they can do that as well. And then bring over a guy at 20-21 who's been playing in Europe at a high level, much like they did with Nurkic, much like they did with Jokic, much like they did with Lavernier. Lots of these players on their team that they were able to keep in Europe for a season and then bring across. And they've got that extra flexibility to do that. So the Nuggets are really in prime position, along with the Suns, along with the Celtics, along with the Sixers, to have a killer draft with all these multiple first-round selections. They've got even the Raptors to it to a lesser degree, and it allows them to get a little bit more creative with what they're doing and swing for the fences a bit in picking those international prospects who might have who might not be available this season. What we like to do in these season in review shows is head straight into the upcoming free agents on this team, and it's a pretty good batch in terms of who they. In terms of who they're losing, I don't think they're going to care too much. DJ Augustine is an unrestricted free agent. Now, Augustine was tremendous for this team after coming over in a trade for Randy Foy. He outplayed Emmanuel Mudiay at stretches. He played next to Mudiay in stretches and really was a key cog down the stretch. Now, he was only on a $3 million deal. He is going to get more than that as a 28-year-old. He's probably not a starting point guard in this point, but one of the top backups, I would say, out there. Despite the start of his career being really rough, his stops in Oklahoma City, his stops in Detroit, his stops in Chicago have been fantastic over the last two or three seasons, and now his stop in Denver. So he's going to command a salary much greater than $3 million and find himself as one of the prime backup point guards on the market. So he might not be back. We've got now Mike Miller, who's an unrestricted free agent, which at 36 years old, I'm not sure the Nuggets are going to be overly bothered if Miller doesn't suit back up. Then we've got Darrell Arthur, who's got a $2.9 million player option. He looked good at times, but been battling injuries for a big chunk of his career, knee problems. I would assume that he opts out of that and looks for a 2 or 3 year deal, maybe at the same money, but for more longevity because of his injury concerns. So you'd think he'd opt out. He might very easily re-sign in Denver, but I would imagine he opts out. And there's a couple of guys with non-guaranteed deals. Joffrey Lavernier with a $1.7 million non-guaranteed. Jakar Sampson at $1 million. And Axel Toupin at the $870,000 for next season. A couple of unguaranteed contracts. Lavernier will be back. Sampson and Toupin, two guys who were signed towards the end of the season. Not so sure about those guys. Not a massive fan of Jakar Sampson, which you're probably aware of if you listen to this podcast and you have been for a couple of years. But Toupin, I think, did pretty well, and he might find himself retained on the roster. But with the flexibility that they need, if they don't go European with these picks and they bring in three first-rounders, they might need to get rid of Sampson. They might need to get rid of Toupin just to fit these guys onto their roster. That is a possibility. So we'll look to see what they do with those picks and with those free agent decisions. But again, if they lose Augustine, if they lose Miller, it's not the end of the world. It's not the core of this team. There's a lot to like about what's happening with the Denver Nuggets at this point. Now, they're a team who, in terms of fantasy, it's not a tough team to work out. There is a lot of questions moving forward, and we're going to cover those questions off later on when we talk to when I answer the questions that you guys have submitted regarding this team. But before we do that, let's talk about today's sponsor, which is Loot Crate. And Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month. That's a bargain. And every month you get 6 to 8 items sent to your house in that crate, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items and more. We have our own unique URL for Loot Crate, and it is lootcrate.com/redrock. And once you visit that unique URL, then you can use the coupon code, which is also redrock, and save $3 on any new subscription. Loot Crate has lots of things in their monthly t-shirt, a pin, plus this month they had something you can carry, something for your kitchen. They had items from Warcraft, Dragon Ball Z, a couple of Marvel items as well, and they're sure the box they're going to put together for June is sure to be packed full of goodies. So head across to lootcrate.com/redrock, use the coupon code redrock, and check out what's over there, and help show the guys at Loot Crate that you support a great endeavor, which is what they're putting together. So it would be awesome if you could do that. I think you get a lot out of it, to be honest, because I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast really do enjoy that sort of material. Some of you don't, and that's absolutely fine as well. I know I'm a big nerd at heart when I saw Captain America: Civil War this weekend with my son, and that was a good time. And you know, Loot Crate caters to that, and they put all the work in terms of going and sourcing these sort of things. They do it for you, so check them out. Even if you don't end up subscribing, which I do recommend that you do, go and check out Loot Crate, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at some of the great offers and great products that they have on their site. All right, let's talk Denver Nuggets now. Let's talk players. And Danilo Gallinari is a player who I don't think he gets as much love as what he should. And some of that comes from the dreaded injury-prone tag, which is something that Gallinari's had to battle through, you know, basically his whole career. He's had lots of injury issues, lots of knee problems. Thankfully, you know, he returned from that knee issue, you know, relatively not unscathed. That's probably the wrong way of putting it. Relatively back to normal, relatively back to being himself. Maybe that's the best way of putting it. And he looked really good this season. Look, he came on exceptionally strong at the end of last season, and we thought, okay, look, I thought personally he's in for a pretty big season here. It didn't quite work out that way because he had quite a severe ankle injury at the end of the season. But if the Nuggets had been in playoff contention, he would have returned before the end of the year, but he didn't. He ended up only playing 53 games. He played 35 minutes a game. Now, he was at 19.5 points, 1.5 threes, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.8 steals on 41-87. And these are numbers I don't think many people anticipated that Gallinari will put together. He was a top 59 cat guy. He was ranked 57th in 8 category leagues. Really, really solid numbers. But again, the injury is something that is going to sour people. It doesn't sour me from him. I know that it does happen to him relatively often, but he's not someone where I go out and 100% avoid, because I think that guys who have that reputation, it knocks their draft position down. It knocks them down by 2-3 rounds. And a guy that you could be a top 50 player for majority of the season, you might get in the 70s, you might get in the 80s. And before his knee issue, he was a consistent top 50 player then as well. So that's about where he sits. And in terms of looking at the rest of the players on this team, he is the lead scorer on this team. He is going to have to go close to 20 points a game. He is going to be getting a lot of shots. He's going to be getting to the line a ton, and that's something he did bring to his game this season that we hadn't seen before. He averaged 8.2 free throw attempts per game and hit 87 of them. And you can't get guys who have that much of an impact on free throw percentage in the proportion of the draft where Gallinari is chosen. It's probably him, DeMar DeRozan. Kevin Martin used to be one of those guys, but he won't be one of those guys anymore. And getting high volume, high percentage free throw guys at that point is really, really hard to do. And he is one of those guys. Throw in 20 points, throw in, you know, okay rebound numbers, nice threes, okay steals, and not a horrific field goal percentage. It's not a great field goal percentage, but it's not horrific. And Gallinari is a guy who is underrated in my mind. But some of that does come down to your ability to stomach your injuries. In terms of win shares on this team, he was second on the team in win shares. He was second on the team in win shares per 48 as well. His offensive box score plus minus was tops on the team. Defensively, he does have a little bit of a way to go. He was a negative 1.7 there. Rounded out the team as the second box score plus minus and had a PER just under 20. Really good true shooting percentage of 58 as well. Great free throw rate. Look, just a really underrated season from Gallinari. Yes, the defense is an issue, but it's not going to keep him off the court with his current team. Maybe in 2 or 3 years' time when he gets to 30 years old, he's only 27 now. When he gets to 30 years old, his ability to get to the line might have decreased, and that might mean that his defense makes it harder to play him 30 minutes. But for the next 2 years, at least, you would think you have got yourself a pretty handy fantasy player. And I still think you're going to be able to get him at a pretty decent discount. Nikola Jokic. This is where the love comes from for me. He was, to me, the second best rookie of the season, behind Karl-Anthony Towns, but I had him slightly ahead of
percentages.
Just because what he did didn't necessarily show up as much as what Porzingis did. Porzingis was great. He put up flashy plays. He had big games where he had 7 blocks. He played in New York. But Jokic was absolutely sensational down the stretch. In terms of fantasy, he was awesome as well. He was ranked 66th in 9 cat leagues. He was ranked 83rd in 8 cat leagues. But post All-Star, he was at 47-59. And that's tremendous for a rookie and for a rookie big man. For a guy that was a second-round draft choice 2 years ago, he came across and was almost, it's fair to say, dominant, especially from an advanced point of view. He led the team in win shares. He led the team in win shares per 48. He led the team in box score plus minus. He led the team in VORP. He posted a PER of 21.5, also a team high. He was putting up numbers that were tremendous, and he did all this in 22 minutes a game. He played 80 games and averages 9.9 points, but half a three, 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists in 21 minutes is fantastic for a center. A steal a game, 0.6 blocks, 51 and 81, low turnovers. He did absolutely everything for this team. The question I have with Nikola Jokic, will he play more? Because Mike Malone frustrated fantasy owners a lot this season with the way that he played him or didn't play him, maybe. Didn't play him as big a minutes as what many would have hoped. And that is, you know, somewhat of a concern moving forward, especially when you're going to have, and this is a guy I'll talk about a fair bit later as well, when you're going to have Yusuf Nurkic back at full strength. What does that mean for Jokic's minutes moving forward? Does he play less than what he played? Now, the Nuggets had a tremendous on-off numbers. The Nuggets were 9.5 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court than when they were off. And again, very limited minutes that he did all this in. But is he a guy that plays 32 minutes a night? I'd probably say no. I would doubt he'd get to that next season. I can't see him being able to do that. But what he did do, like I said, he's only at 22 minutes a game. Over the last 2 months, he played 27 minutes a game. And that's obviously impressive. And that's sort of where he sits, a 25 to 27 minute a night a game guy. But what was also interesting is down the stretch, they played him at the four. Now, he only played 5% of his minutes at the four all season. The other 95% were at center. But they started experimenting with him and Nurkic playing together, and it worked. I was calling for it for a lot during the season. Don't think that Mike Malone really heard me, but at the end, he started going with it. Now, Jokic does have defensive speed issues in terms of being able to defend fours in this league, but his defense is not a negative. He was at 2.2 defensive win shares to lead the team. He was at 2.2 box score plus minus to finish our second on the team in defensive box score plus minus. He's not a defensive negative, but in terms of just his speed heading out to guard fours, that might be a concern. But the guy's 20 years old. I do believe that he will be able to play some four in this league, and he might play 10 minutes a night with Nurkic, and then they play the rest of the time at center. And I think that's going to be, you know, key into getting him to 30 minutes a night, whether that pairing can work. They're going to be working on it a lot in camp and in preseason. And if they start to get it to click, it's going to be great for his fantasy value. Where he gets drafted next year, I have absolutely no idea. But he does, to me, have top 40 upside for his career for Dynasty. He's got probably top 35 upside. But the minutes is the real concern. I just don't ever see him being a 34, 35 minute a night sort of player. But he doesn't need to be. And this is something I stressed last season. When he ranked 60th, playing 22 minutes a game, that's brilliant. He plays 27 minutes a game, 28 minutes a game, then he can get to 40, no problem. And I wouldn't be stressing too much, thinking, oh, he's not playing 30 minutes, he's not playing 32, because this is the argument that I have for years and years and years, and prior to Kawhi Leonard really breaking out, oh, but he only plays 30 minutes a night. Cool. He still was the 10th best player, right, playing 30 minutes a night, so you get 10th value. That's what you get. I don't care that he only plays 30 minutes a night if he returns the value of being the 10th pick. Same as Jokic. If he plays 22 minutes and returns me top 60 value, then it's top 60 value. It's not that you don't go and play a fantasy league and go, oh, look at the stats this guy put up, but he only did it in 22 minutes, so we're just going to cut them even further. It doesn't matter. Yes, it sort of does limit their upside, but I think that he can increase that, and that experiment of him playing at the four with Nurkic is going to be key to him getting minutes. I love him in Dynasty, but I think that the Dynasty owner that has him will also love him. Although, towards the end of the season, there was a slight drop-off in Jokic's play and in the way that he was used by Malone to a degree. So maybe this is a time where his value has dipped enough where you can just throw out an offer and just gauge, just test the waters and see if you can acquire him. But he can do... I talked about Karl Anthony Towns on the Timberwolves show the other day. Jokic can do it all. He can score, he can rebound, he can pass, he can shoot, he can hit threes, he hits his free throws, he shoots from the field, he blocks shots, he gets steals, he does literally everything on the court. And you know, turned loose, fully loose, he could be a guy who contributes in every category. It's definitely more unlikely than it is with Towns, but we saw that he can have a really bright future in this league, and he is one of my favorite players in the entire NBA, and I love what he was able to do. To transition from a guy who's one of my favorite players in the NBA, and we transition to Will Barton, who is very, very far from my favorite player in the NBA. I probably had the first 3 months of this season just looking at box scores and looking at him, please play, and go, this doesn't compute. It does not make sense. He is shit. He's not good. Why? How is he putting up these numbers? How is it happening? How is Will Barton putting up the sort of numbers that he did? And I could not get my head around it. He ended up the season as the 83rd ranked player, 88th in 8-cut leagues. Absolutely amazing. Where did this come from? Nobody drafted him. If you're in a 20-team league, you probably didn't draft him. Where did it come from? He was shooting, you know, 4, 5, 8% better than career numbers than every season he'd done from three, from the field. His free throws took a big jump. All that stuff was huge. But post All-Star break, Will Barton was ranked 219th in 9-cat leagues. He was ranked 170th in 8-cat leagues. And that, folks, is the Will Barton that I know and love. Last year, he shot 27% from three. The year before, he shot 30% from three. The year before, he shot 14% from three. This year, he shot 35%, which includes 28% over the last 3 months of the season. So he was shooting 40% to start the year, which was just ludicrous. A guy that's improving his shooting by 13%, it was not going to stick, and it didn't stick, and he fell in a massive hole. He had an opportunity when Danilo Gallinari went down to really step up, but he didn't. He was in this weird bench role where I think he had two games where he went 0 of 25 combined from the field. There in another game he'd come out and score 15 points and look good. But to me, he's just not a good player. Yes, he did have a really good season, and his per 36 numbers were all, you know, great. He scored four more points per game. This is on a per 36 basis. He doubled his three-pointers per game. He had more rebounds. He had more assists. And again, his percentages were much improved. But the way that it tailed off to me is exactly who Will Barton is. And with the emergence of Gaz Harris, with the return of Danilo Gallinari, and with the potential of adding a wing player in the draft, I think this is the best Will Barton we ever see. And that is somewhat influenced by the fact that I just couldn't believe what I was seeing from him last season. I couldn't understand what was happening, but it's also influenced by the fact that I've watched him play. And I also saw the way that things completely fell in a massive hole towards the end of the season. Now, his advanced numbers are pretty good. Defensively, he was solid. But he's very small. He's very slight. But you know, 4.3 win shares, not bad. He finished fourth on the team. Win shares per 48, he was sixth. His box score plus minuses were okay. They were sort of average at negative 0.1 total. So almost an average player. And I think that's probably what he is, just an average player. But he wasn't playing like an average player to start the season. He was playing like a guy who was playing completely out of his brain, and that fell in a big hole. And I said, with Harris, I think, taking another step forward, with Gallinari returning, I'm not sure we see Will Barton as a guy who's ranked inside the top 85, which is what he was last season. And before the All-Star break, he was the 50th ranked player, which is just ridiculous. And that is as bad a split as you can get, to go from 50 pre-All-Star to 219th post-All-Star when you had a bigger opportunity. It really says a lot to me about what sort of a player Barton is. So if I have him in a dynasty league, I am trying to get rid of him if someone believes the Will Barton hype. And he is a player, and there are players, and I've talked about this plenty of times, that have tremendous hype. Tony Roden is one of them. He's terrible, but people love him. Nick Batum, on the other hand, is the opposite. Nick Batum is a really, really good player. He's a really key fantasy contributor. He'll go out one game and shoot 3 of 11. Drop him. He's got to go. I can't go. Doesn't matter that he had 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals, and hit 3 threes. He shot 3 of 11. Batum, shit, he's useless. And that is what you got to capitalize on. Will Barton, on the other hand, Barton's the best. Will the thrill. Will's the man. Cool. You have him. I don't want him. Gauge the market. But he is a guy that it works in your favor for trading him away, because I think that his reputation, or the way that people see what he can do, is higher than what he actually can do. And I'm thinking he is more the 219 guy than the 50 guy. He's not 219. He'll probably be a guy that you'd want to draft around 100 next season, outside the top 100. But I would be 75% sure that he ends the season on majority of waiver wires, or should. That's just the way that I see his game. I'm just not a massive fan. I just don't see it as being sustainable. Partly because the next man I'm about to talk about, Gaz Harris, really, really took a big step forward. He was terrible as a rookie, but then coming into preseason, Mike Malone basically anointed him as the starting shooting guard, to which a lot of people raised an eyebrow and said, what? Huh? Will, not Will, but Gary Harris? Really? He's the starter? But he was good. The other thing that I completely haven't mentioned at all, especially with Barton, Wilson Chandler is returning next season, who didn't play a single minute this year. So Wilson Chandler returns. It's another wing player. Now, Barton plays more at the 2 rather than the 3, whereas Chandler's a 3-4, but it's still some wing minutes that are going to come away. And if anyone's losing them, if it's Harris or Barton's losing minutes, it's Barton to me. Now, Harris finished the season ranked 89th in 9-cat, 99 in 8-cat, very similar to Barton. But his splits are very opposite. Pre-All-Star 105, post 65. 8-cat 108/81. So big, big drop-offs or big improvements from him in that second half of the season. Harris ended the year playing 32 minutes a game. He had 12.3 points. Actually, I should go through Barton's stats, which I didn't do. 14.5 points, 1.5 threes, 5.8 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.9 steals, half a block. Harris, 12.5 points, 1.5 threes, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.3 steals, 47-82. And I think one of the key numbers there to me is that as a shooting guard, he's shooting 47% from the field. 82% from the line is great as well. What he does need to do, though, is he does need to improve his peripheral numbers. He needs to get more rebounds, he gets more assists, but he is a defensive terror. 1.3 steals, 1.5 threes. He's easily a 1.5 potential guy in terms of threes and steals. He can get his scoring up to 15 points. And the improvement that we saw from him in his rookie season to his second season was tremendous. Even in per 36 numbers, he had over a 4-point increase in points. He increased his threes per 36 by 0.5. His rebounding was the same. He added an extra 0.7 assists per 36. His steals actually dropped slightly, but he took his field goal percentage from 30 to 47 and his free throws from 75 to 82. Now, he is a really good free throw shooter, and I love what Gary Harris brings to this team. If you look at box score plus minus, he finished ahead of Barton in that sense, and I think he's still got a lot of room to improve defensively. He was fifth on the team in win shares, just marginally behind Barton. His PER had left a lot to be desired, but a great true shooting percentage of 57% is really an impressive number. He just does need to improve his ball handling a bit, improve his passing a little bit, which I do think he can do to a degree, but it's his defense, it's his three-pointers that's going to keep him there, and there's definitely no secret that Mike Malone loves what Gary Harris can do. There's no mystery in that. He loves Harris. He loves what Harris can do. He started him basically all season. He put him in key roles. He played in big minutes, really coming from nowhere. And he is heading into that key third season, which so many players take a big step. And I am super excited for what we're going to see from Gary Harris heading into next season. And that, again, is one of the reasons why I think that his ascension will really restrict Barton's ability to play minutes. And I can't see Will Barton being a 30-minute per game guy next season. He only played 29 this year, but how reckon he goes back down to maybe 27? Again, all this stuff is up in the air. But I wouldn't be surprised. You know, there was that slight difference in their rankings this year. I think that it probably flips the switch next season and we see Harris ahead of Barton. And that's the trajectory things seem to be heading on. I do like a lot of players on this team. Barton's not one of them, and the next guy is also not one of them. Ken Fareed is just a perennially disappointing player who takes 3 to 4 months to get anything happening and then lets us down even after that. He finished the season 92nd in 9-cat leagues, 100 in 8-cat. He had a really sort of solid stretch around February, but then a back injury kept him out almost the entire end of the season, and if it didn't, it limited him. You get the feeling that Malone is not a fan of Fareed. I know I'm not a fan. He played just 25 minutes a game, which was actually less than what he played under Brian Shaw, and we were killing Brian Shaw for not playing him enough. 12.5 points, 8.7 rebounds is really impressive, but no threes, half a steal, 0.9 blocks, 1 assist, 56 and 61 as his percentages. These are okay numbers, but they're not anything that I'm super excited about with Ken Fareed. I just don't think he's a really good player. Again, the minutes were 3 minutes a game less than what he saw under Brian Shaw. He's never going to be a good defender. It doesn't appear like anyway at this point. But advanced numbers, pretty good. Win shares per 48, third on the team. Win shares, third on the team. Defensive or box score plus minus, third on the team. So he does provide for this team. But to me, that role that he's in of playing 25 minutes is the role that he should stay in. I much prefer to see Jokic and Nurkic out there and have Fareed as that first big off the bench when they might start with the Jokic-Nurkic 4-5 combo, move Jokic to move Jokic to center, take Nurkic to the bench, put Fareed on at the four, throw some Darrell Arthur in there, and I think you've got a nice four-man, and Lavernier is the fifth big, a nice combination, but I don't think Fareed is necessarily a starter. He just is too limited in what he can do. He rebounds, and he can score and put backs. So that's what he can do. He can't pass, he can't stretch, he can't defend very well, he can't be a rim protector. There's just a lot that he can't do, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him traded if the price was right at some point during the season. In terms of his rankings, he's always around that 90 sort of range, so an eighth round player. I just don't think he has upside at that point. Now, he's a guy that can really help to boost your field goal percentage and your rebounding numbers, but he just doesn't do enough in the other areas for me to get even marginally excited about what he can do. Not much more for me to really talk about Fareed, but I just think this is where he is, and I don't think he ever really gets better than this, and I think he's a chance to regress heavily over the next two seasons, especially considering the type of game that he's got, where it's super aggressive, rebounding, and if athleticism starts to die off, which we know that it does as you get older, and Fareed is 26, so he's still relatively in his prime, but 28 years old, does he have that same energy level? Does he have that same rebounding spark? I would have to think not, and then why do you play him? If he's not an aggressive rebounder, what's the point of having him out on the court? And that really limits him in Dynasty to me, and I don't really ever think he approaches a top 75 player and will start to regress in the next season or two. Emmanuel Mudiay was almost the worst player in the NBA to start the season, played a lot of minutes, but was just dreadful with those minutes. Advanced metrics hated him to start the year, but he looked really good when he came back. Now, he suffered that ankle injury, which kept him out a long time, and was a little bit worrisome considering that an ankle kept him out for months when he was over in China before his rookie season. But when he came back, he looked a lot better, and that's something you want to see. You want to see these rookies get better as the season goes on, and that is exactly what we saw from Mudiay. He ended up playing 68 games at 30 minutes a pop, 13 points, 1-3, 3.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, a steal, half a block, 36 and 67. That's where the concern lies, is those percentages, and 32% from three. That's where you've got the worry. But he did improve down the stretch, and I think that's one of the key things that we want to take away from this. Over the last 2 months of the season, he shot 41% from the field. He shot 76% from the line. Over the last 3 months, he shot 75% from the line. He took his three-pointers in those last 3 months up to 37%. And those sort of improvements give you a huge amount of confidence heading into next season. He is never going to be a knockdown shooter. I think we can all agree on that. But in terms of fantasy, he contributes 1.5 threes, and he's a 41-42% shooter who converts 75% of his free throws. Then that concern that you have for him in roto leagues evaporates. That thing where you force him into a double percentage punt evaporates. He took his turnovers well down too. Over the last 3 months, he was at 2.6 a game, whereas his overall season was at 3.2, so you know that how much higher it was to start the year. He took all those things down, which is where, if you're in a 9-cat roto, he was impossible to own because he killed your field goals, he killed your free throws, he killed your turnovers. But he worked on all those things, and he got better at them all. And for a guy heading into his second season, I don't think you're going to ask much more than that. Now, advanced numbers detest what Mudiay did. He was last on this team. He was a negative 2.1 in win shares, which is horrific. It is very rare to find someone who is a negative unless their name is Tony Roden. But Mudiay did it. He was negative, obviously, in his win shares per 48. His box score plus minus, he was worst on the team again, a negative 4.3. Offensively, he was just a huge negative burden on this team. His PER was putrid, 9.9. And these are all terrible numbers. A true shooting of 44 is disgusting. But the second half of the season really started to step up for me. I'm excited to see what he does next year. I don't see anyone taking the starting job away from him. It's not going to be DJ Augustine. It's not going to be Jameer Nelson, although Nelson played pretty well in stretches during the season, but Nelson at 34 years old is obviously not the point guard of the future on this team. I think that Mudiay has got a lot of upside, and I'm looking at these last 3 months, and it makes you think that has he worked some of this out? He's worked some of it out. Has he worked it out entirely? No. He's got a long way to go, but he might not be a guy that completely obliterates your offense, which is what he did for the majority of his rookie season. But the way that it moved forward is a real positive sign for me, for Moutier. And in terms of his fantasy numbers, he ranked, as I said, 309th for the season, but 198th post-All-Star in 9-cat. In 8-cat, it's a big difference because his turnovers were huge. 167 full season, 8-cat, 309 9-cat. That's a big difference. Post-All-Star in 8-cat, 130. And then in an 8-2 punt situation, 119 for the season, 113 post-All-Star. So he was ownable in a punting situation, assuming you were taking his weaknesses into consideration. But he was a guy that was unownable in Roto, but put up some nice head-to-head numbers, assuming you knew how to use him. But even then, some of those discrepancies or some of those issues did start to peel away as the season progressed, and that is exactly what you want to ask for when you're looking at a rookie. Darrell Arthur is a very confounding player to me. He goes out there and looks terrible, and then he goes out there and plays a game and he scores 20 points and has 12 rebounds and blocks 4 shots and gets 3 steals, and you go, what on earth is going on? The knee problems are a concern for him. He is not he's not young. He's 28 years old. As I said, I think he opts out and tries to sign a 3-year deal or so, maybe back with his team. But to me, he is best as the third big man, probably fourth big man on a team who can occasionally come in and put up some decent numbers. Now, he played 22 minutes in 70 games, 7.5 points, over half a three, 4 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks, 45 and 76. So just really solid numbers. And in a deep league, you're talking at the 164th player in 9-cat, 184th in 8-cat. So 20-team leagues, he was a guy that provided value. And short-term in even some standard leagues, when he was getting some extra run, he looked really good. But he just has never shown the ability to do it at a consistent level long enough in his NBA career. And he's going to be just restricted to being that sort of backup big man who knows his role, knows what to do, can adjust, can stretch it, can play some defense as well, and he fits that role perfectly to me, and that's not a bad thing to have that sort of a role. In terms of his advanced numbers, they're all pretty positive. You know, 7th in win shares, not a bad number. 6th in box score plus minus, pretty impressive. Win shares per 48, he sits at 9th. These are all pretty nice numbers, and he fits that role, you know, serviceably. Does he ever get any better and become a top 150 player? I think you're grasping at straws if you think that. But he should easily be a top 200 player again next season, and maybe for one more year after that. But I think the downfall comes quite quickly after that. Yusuf Nurkic, definitely someone who was in the cadre of my boyfriend's in his rookie season, was horribly misused by Brian Shaw, just refused to give him any confidence or any consistency. And you know, eventually he'd play and then he'd get benched and he wouldn't come back in. And all, we could relive the Brian Shaw days for years. I'm sure people don't want to, but they were bad. Nurkic had a knee problem and it kept him out way longer than anyone really anticipated. And when he came back, he wasn't in shape. It took him forever to get right. But when he did start getting right towards the end of the season, we started seeing glimpses of that guy that got us all so excited in his rookie season. He was pre-All-Star, the 318th ranked player in 9-cat. Post, 156. 8-cat, 296/104. A really big difference as he started to get everything pumping again. Now, for the season, he only played in 32 games at 17 minutes. 8 points, 5 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, 42% and 62 from the field, which is terrible numbers. But over the last 2 months, he got back, and it was only 7 games, but 26 minutes, 13 and 7.5, 2.5 assists, over a steal, 2 blocks, 47% from the field. This is the Yusuf Nurkic that we saw in his rookie season. We saw a guy this year that averaged 18 and 10 per 36 minutes, 2.5 blocks, 1.5 steals, 47% from the field. We saw a guy that can produce. We saw a guy that can be a real rim protector. We saw a guy who's a real badass out there. And I think that knee injury really caused a lot of problems for him. And I don't think that's really revealing a huge amount. It was bothersome for him. Absolutely, the team is better when he's on the court. You know, plus 4.4 last year, plus 3.8 this year. These are good numbers. He He didn't have his best year, definitely. But he is a huge positive defensively. 2.8 as a box score plus minus is great. His offense is a struggle, though. Negative 4.1. The win shares weren't awesome. But again, he only played 32 games. So a 0.4 total is not the end of the world. And an above average PER of 15.9. Much like an Alex Lynn, he needs to get his field goal percentage back up. I think he can do it. But it's really defensively that he can be a real key factor for this team. And again, like I talked about with Jokic, I want to see Nurkic and Jokic playing together. I want to see them working off each other. They are both really decent passers. Jokic a lot more so than Nurkic, and Jokic stretches the floor more. But defensively, getting in steal lanes, blocking shots, Nurkic can do it. He is a tough bastard out there. He gets rebounds, and I think he can score, and I am expecting a big season from Yusuf Nurkic next season. I think that he is a standard league guy next year. He's a guy that I don't think you have to take inside the top 100, but should finish inside it. I think you can grab him in your last couple of rounds, most likely. I think that people might be a little bit down on him, and you'll see when we get to the questions, people are like, okay, what does this mean for Nurkic now that Jokic is here? Is he done? Is he cooked? I don't believe that at all. I think that he plays 28 minutes a night again next season, and starts to put up really big numbers and shows that they've got two awesome big men who can do numerous things and will work to their strengths and help this team grow. I really think that Nurkic is in for a big third year. He should be fully healthy. The knee shouldn't be a problem. He'll have worked with Nurkic in that two big formation for the offseason and camp. And I can't wait to see what he can do, because he has got top 50 upside written all over him. And we already know that Jokic is a top 50 player, basically, already. But Nurkic is a top 50 guy waiting in the wings as well. He's a guy who can be a 15 and 10 with two blocks and 1.5 steals at 70% from the line and 50% from the field. That's his upside. He can average 3 assists a game, I think, as well. Maybe 2.5, but I think that he can do that. And he is a guy I'm super excited to see. That's probably the last guy that I'm super excited to see on this roster. We've got a couple of backup point guards now to talk about. Jameer Nelson had stretches of playing really well, and he did take over from Emmanuel Mudiay at times and looked clearly the better point guard, which is not hard for a rookie who was the worst in the league. Nelson's numbers, though, he was dealing with some injuries to end the season, and that wasn't great for him. He finished the season ranked 244th on the... And that sort of feels about right. He was on and off rosters in that little stretch that he had. He played 39 games at 27 minutes a pop, 7.7 points, 1-3, 5 assists, half a steal, 3 rebounds, 37 and 86. So you obviously can see the assist numbers are great. The steals are good. The threes are good. But he's 34 years old. What can we expect from him? I think that he fits into a nice... He's not playing 27 minutes a night next year. That is almost for certain. I think he fits into a 20-minute, 22-minute a night role as the backup point guard, assuming Augustine leaves. And Moody a bit more under control. Harris more at the two. Barton more at the two. Wilson Chandler back into the rotation. Some draft picks coming in. I don't think we see Jameer Nelson hovering around that 244 ranking again, which was 205th in 8-cat rankings. I think he drops probably 40, 50 spots because he's not playing 27 minutes a night, in my opinion. But he was a key part of this team. He was really important, I think, for Emmanuel Mudiay and helped Moutier's growth. But in terms of his advanced numbers, he was not ideal. He finished 10th on the team in win shares. His box score plus minus was 14th at a negative 3.1, which is... For comparison's sake, he was behind Axel Toupin and JJ Hicks, and that's how poor his box score plus minus were. The only guys that were worse than him were Kostas Papanikolaou, which most of you wouldn't remember played for the Nuggets, Sean Kilpatrick, Eric Green, Randy Foy, and Emmanuel Mudiay. Not really a murderer's row of players there. Speaking of Augustine, he came across in that trade for Randy Foy, and he was DMP CD'd in Oklahoma City. Came across here and looked really good for big stretches. Now, he played 19 minutes a game for the year in 62 games, 7.5, 3.2 assists, 0.6 steals, 1.1 threes on 42 and 81. But his time with Denver was obviously more successful than what we saw in his time in Oklahoma City. If you look at his win shares per 48 whilst he was in Denver, he was fourth on this team. He put up 1.9 win shares in his 28 games. His offensive box score plus minus was a 2.8, which was fantastic. His overall box score plus minus placed him seventh on the team ahead of Yusuf Nurkic. And we look at the stat splits between his two two locations during the season, and you can see just how much better he was once he arrived in Denver. He averaged 11.6 points as opposed to 4.4. He averaged 4.7 assists as opposed to 1.9, 0.9 steals to 0.4. He averaged 1.6 threes to 0.7. And yes, he played 8 more minutes, but all those numbers, even on a per possession basis, are way higher whilst he was in Denver than when he was in Oklahoma City. I think he's earned himself a bigger contract than $3 million. Be interesting to see where he ends up, but it might not be back on this team. In terms of his fantasy rankings, he was 261 for the year, but post-All-Star, 147 and 125 in 8-cat leagues, and that was about right. You had to own him down the stretch because he was playing 28 minutes, 30 minutes a night while Moutier was struggling and putting up great numbers. Probably don't think he gets back to the top 150 again next year, but if whoever is in front of him gets injured, he's an automatic pickup. And there are guys that you can look at who is a backup. If they get thrust into a starting role, they're not automatic pickups. This guy is an absolute automatic. Have to own him as soon as the guy in front of him gets injured, because he will put up numbers. He'll shoot a great free throw percentage. He'll hit threes. He'll get assists. He'll get steals. He'll get points. He has to be owned in that sort of scenario. And he's a great deep league contributor. You go to 16-team leagues, I want Augustine. If I'm in 14-team leagues, I probably want Augustine. But we need to see Denver Augustine and not Oklahoma City Augustine. And I'm pretty confident we will. Joffre Lavernier, he was the darling of preseason. Came out and was putting up double-doubles left, right, and center with Jusuf Nurkić out, and everyone was like, let's draft Joffre Lavernier. I was a little bit cautious on it. Yeah, I did know that Jokic was the better player. I didn't know that Jokic was going to be this good, but Jokic was the guy that I was keeping an eye on. But Lavernier came out in preseason and put up big numbers. And he is a guy that I do actually really like. I've liked him before he came to the NBA when he was playing over in France. I thought he was a very interesting player. In fact, one of my dynasty teams was named the Joffre Lavernier All-Stars before he even came across. And at this point, though, what's his best role? Is he better than Jokic? No. Is he better than Nurkic? No. Is he better than Fareed? No. Is he better than Darrell Arthur? Maybe on his day. So where does that leave him on this team? As the fourth big, then maybe Arthur doesn't come back and he comes into that role. Maybe Fareed gets traded. He does have ability, obviously. He's playing in the NBA. And he's relatively talented. 18 minutes a night he played in 59 games. 7.9 points, 5 rebounds, 0.2 threes, but defensively he's terrible. 0.2 steals, 0.3 blocks, but 51 and 90 are absolutely amazing percentages for a big man. That is great, and that is something that you love seeing from your big man. His win shares, 2.3, finished him 7th on the team. That's impressive. He was 5th in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus placed him at 9th. So he was pretty impressive in that sort of sense. And he's someone that I would obviously, even though the contract is unguaranteed, I would definitely be bringing him back. And I think he's got some room to grow. He is 24 years old, so he's not super young, but he's not old either. And he's a guy that I think can get better. But when we look at his rankings, where he ranked 209th last year in 9-cat, 235th in 8-cat. Does he get better? With Nurkic playing more, with Jokic playing more, not sure where Lavernier sort of fits in there. I think that probably his best bet is a top 170 fit, maybe a top 150 at some point in his career, but he's just limited too much defensively to me to ever be a guy who puts up big numbers from a fantasy point of view or gets enough minutes from a real life point of view to just bludgeon himself into big fantasy minutes. I do like him. I do think he's a really interesting player, but the situation he's in, he's got two guys who are younger than him and better than him at this point, and that is not a great pathway to minutes for a guy like Joffre Lavernier. Jakar Sampson, he was the guy who I did claim was the worst player in the NBA a couple of seasons ago in Philadelphia. He doesn't do much to really dissuade me from that opinion. He ranked 376th in 9-cat leagues, and the kicker here is in per 36 value, he ranked 431st, so almost the worst player in the league in per 36 value. I don't know. I know the Sixers released him in order to do that failed Joel Anthony trade, and they wanted to get him back, but the Nuggets snatched him. I don't know why they were so keen on snatching Jakar Sampson, but to me, he's just a bad player. He was a guy that when Gallinari went down, Mike Malone goes, all right, we're going to start Jakar Sampson. Cool. And everyone went, oh, maybe, even me. Okay, he can have some value in your 16-team leagues, because if he's going to play 22 minutes, he's going to just force himself into getting some rebounds. His name's not Tayshaun Prince. He will get some stats if he plays. But what we saw is Malone, okay, you played 27 minutes, Jakar. No, how about you play 25? Let's play 22 or maybe 20. Let's play 15 or let's play 12. Because he started realizing how shit he was. And that's a terrible sign when you're on a team. And that same goes with Jordan Hamilton in New Orleans that I talked about yesterday. If you're on a team that's got injury issues and you're thrust into a situation where you have to start and play minutes, and the coach just starts going, no, let's just pull it back just a bit. Let's pull it back. You're done. And that's a problem with Samson. I'm not a fan of him at all as a player. From all accounts, he's a great bloke, which is great for him. And at 23 years old, he does have a future to improve, but I wouldn't want it to be on my team, to be honest. I'm not sure that he's really the sort of player that can improve too much. Offensively, he's poor. Look, defensively, I think he's pretty good, and he does offer something there. But with Gary Harris patrolling the wings, not sure where Samson really fits in altogether. He can do some things. He's not a complete stiff. He's really athletic, which is big. But overall, fantasy-wise, are we ever going to see a top 200 season from Jakar Samson? I would be shocked if we did. Axel Toupin came across and was a teammate of Geoffrey Lavernier in France and actually put together some okay games, but overall it didn't mean much. 15 minutes in his 21 games, 3.5 points, 1.5 rebounds, 0.3 steals, which is okay in those minutes, 0.3 blocks, again okay, and shot 36% from the field. If he is retained, I would expect his shooting percentages to go up. I would expect his contributions to increase, but again, like these other wings, with Wilson Chandler back, how does he get 15 minutes a game again? And Gallinari's back. He doesn't. And that might lead to him not being retained in order for them to sign some of these draft picks. Not really sure that Toupin, you got to be 350 deep to really be considering him in your league, and I'm not sure his upside's there. The last guy is Mike Miller. He could very well retire. He didn't crack the top 400 last season. He didn't really show us anything that was worth looking at, and that's why I'm not really going to waste too much time talking about him. That is the team done. Again, Wilson Chandler did not play a single minute, so I've got nothing to really talk about with him, but he is going to come back, and he is going to be a very interesting player. Where do they fit him? They won't start him over Gallinari. They won't start him over Harris. They won't start him... Well, maybe they do start him at the four, but then there's Jokic, there's Fareed, there's Nurkic. I think he plays as a backup guy, and he could be a 12-team guy, but he's probably, to me, going to be a 14-team league player at this point, Wilson Chandler, and not someone that I'm going to be too hopeful for. And some people will. Some people will get excited about him and remember Wilson Chandler, and he is a really good player. But at his peak, he's a fringe 12-team league guy, not coming back from a season-ending shoulder injury when other players have stepped up and taken your place. All right, I want to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to answer the questions that you provided to me for the Denver Nuggets.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see.
Denver Nuggets. And by the way, the next two teams we're going to be doing are the Sacramento Kings and the New York Knicks, so check out the tweets and the Facebook posts for those for you to submit your questions if you do have any questions on either of those two teams. These questions that we've got here are things that I have covered, but we'll just address them specifically here. Eric Wagner leaves a question on Facebook. He says, does Ken Fareed have more value to the Nuggets or a contender coming off the bench? Yeah, I don't think he's a starter level player on a good team. I did cover that down before. I think he's probably only got one or two decent years left in him at this point in his career. I think that he would be a pretty interesting spark pluggy sort of energy player off the bench in 20 minutes a night. Whether he wants to play there, whether the team wants to play him that at $12 million a year remains to be seen. But yes, I don't think that he's a starting power forward on a good team. Jason Elson on Twitter at Jason_M_Elson. What round would you draft Gaz Harris next year? It's a good question. Where would I draft him? Well, these questions are tough because obviously we don't know anything about the upcoming teams. And drafting players, a lot depends on ADP data and where you can get him. But again, finishing just inside the top 90 last year, I think that if you get him in the eighth round, I think you should be pretty happy with that. If you get him in, you might have to get him in the seventh, because I am expecting a bit of a jump forward from Harris, especially in his scoring ability. I think that a seventh round pick is not an absolutely crazy spot for Gaz. Studes, who's on Twitter at GrinPowderDeer, he says it's dynasty related. What does the future hold for Yusuf Nurkic? Jokic has clearly overtaken him, and I can't see that changing. Fine, Jokic is a better player, but as I touched on, they will play together. They will try to play together. And I think that Nurkic has a big third season here. I think that he can put up some really, really interesting numbers. And I think a lot of people are going to think like you, Studes, that Nurkic has been completely overtaken and he's been completely marginalized and he's going to be eliminated from this team. I don't think that's the case. I think that we saw him start to play some big minutes at the end of the year. We saw him start to play next to Jokic. And I think that, assuming that he can start to get along better with Mike Malone, which there were some communication issues, there were some personality clashes with Malone, but Malone's dealt with Boogie Cousins. He can handle Yusuf Nurkic. I think that once that gets back into line, which I think it started to at the end of the year, I think that he can actually play with Jokic. I think they can coexist. And in an ideal world, they could play 30 minutes apiece each and be both top 50 fantasy guys. That is definitely the ceiling for these guys. So your dynasty related, I think that a lot of people will think like you, and I reckon you can snag Nurkic at a pretty decent rate, at a pretty decent price at this point. Barry Baker chimes in on the Nurkic front. Do you see Nurkic staying in Denver? And if so, what numbers are we expecting from him? Yes, I do see him staying there, and I think we see much improved numbers from him. I think we can see 14 and 9, two blocks is not ridiculous. It's probably upper end, but I don't think it's completely ridiculous. Super Buck Wild on Twitter at Super Buck Wild. He says, my question is about Moutier. Where does he go in a standard 8-cat roto? I'm not sure I would draft him. Well, you know what? At the start of the year, you couldn't have drafted him for the first 4 months. But as I highlighted, he improved those percentages tremendously. In 8-cat, you're not counting turnovers, so that was a terrible category for him. But if you're shooting 75% from the line, if you're shooting 42% from the field, why can't you draft him? I think that you're probably picking him around pick 100. And I think he's got a massive, massive chance to exceed that value and fall himself into the top 70. All he needs to do is keep his shot solid. He can hit 1.5 threes. He can get you 6.5 assists. He can get 5 rebounds. He could score 15 points. He can get you some steals. I think that it's a bit of a risk, definitely in a roto league with those percentages, but I think that they can improve to a level enough where they are usable and the other numbers should increase. I do think that he's going to be a guy you pick around pick 100 and ends up being a top 70 player. That would be my guess at this point. We are done for the Denver Nuggets season in review podcast, guys. I think there was some good chatter. Well, I hope there was some good chatter. Let me know if you think it was some good chatter, or if you think that I'm spitting bullshit, which I could be doing as well. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and follow Basketball Monster at BaskMonster, where you can find all the up-to-date news that's happening throughout these conference finals. Also, just quick touching on the conference finals, fantastic for Toronto to even the series at 2-2. I'm not sure that they can really get through. I would love for them to get through. I love seeing these teams that have never won it. And Cleveland, they've never won it as well. But I would love to see Raptors fans and have the Raptors get into the NBA Finals. I just have a real soft spot for them. Not as much of a soft spot for the Cavs. I don't see it happening. They still have to win one in Cleveland. And I'm not sure that they can really do that. But tremendous play for them over the last two games. And that is just a tremendous effort in itself after being written off basically everywhere for them to get it back to 2-2. Great. Keep the faith. If the Raptors win game five, they are through, I reckon. And that would be a huge, huge upset. And anyone who's out there tweeting that the NBA will not let the Raptors get to the finals, that they won't allow a Thunder Raptors NBA finals, just stop it with the conspiracy bullshit. There is no conspiracy. It's like rigging the draft lottery that teams, that the refs were favoring the Hornets over the Heat because that's what they want. It is just the biggest load of shit I've ever heard. I hate conspiracy theories. I hate them as much as anything in the world. You hear them with sports, you hear them with healthcare, just reading stuff about vaccinations and big pharma and bullshit like that. Oh, they hide the cure for cancer to get money. It is an absolute joke. It is an embarrassment. It is an affront to people's professionalism. The NBA's not rigging it. They're not rigging it so the Raptors don't get into the finals. They're not rigging it so we don't see a Thunder Raptors NBA finals. And also, I also hate seeing the tweets, oh, they're going to have terrible ratings. Just watch it. Why? Is Durant and Westbrook not good enough? Is the entire country of Canada not good enough for the Raptors? Just don't tweet any conspiracy bullshit to me about the Raptors and Thunder. The NBA won't let it happen because they've got no choice. If that's what happens, that's what happens. And they will not rig it. It just does not happen. We're done. Sorry for that little rant. I just was pissed off reading things before and I needed to get that out. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up if you are watching on YouTube. Leave a review if you are listening on iTunes. Hope you guys are enjoying this series of season in review shows. We've got stacks of stuff happening. Dynasty League announcements coming soon as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.